Welcome to Finding Contentment, the official podcast of the American Institute of Stress. The goal of this podcast is to explore the science, psychology, and practical wisdom that can help us manage our stress. If you are looking for personal growth and professional success, or just want a more fulfilling life, visit us at stress.org. And now here is the host and executive director of the American Institute of Stress, Will Heckman.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to Finding Contentment. Thanks for joining us again today. Hey, just want to remind everybody, please go to stress.org. And while you're there, you can find some great assessments to find out, you know, what actually is stressing you out. And also, don't forget, you can subscribe to our free magazines, absolutely free. It's Contentment and, of course, Combat Stress for first responders and vets. So make sure you subscribe to that. And of course, I'm going to say it while you're watching this YouTube video, if you're watching it, yeah, hit that subscribe button, make our day. It really does help our channel, and we really do appreciate it. And today we have a really interesting subject. Today we're going to delve into the world of performing and creativity, inspiration, and the unique stressors that artists face. From the relentless pursuit of perfection to the emotional roller coaster fueled by stress and rejection and a lot of self-doubt. And we'll delve into the resilience that helps artists push through, the unyielding determination they possess, and the unwavering passion that keeps their creative fires burning, even amidst all that stress. So today we invited a very important guest, and his name is Nick Moulton. And Nick is an award-winning actor. He's a musician, but he's also a graduate student studying clinical mental health wellness counseling. And he's also a mental wellness advocate based out of New York City. He's originally from a military-based family in New England, and Nick has performed internationally and domestically, working predominantly on theatrical pieces as a singer and actor. He plays multiple instruments, and with more than a decade of experience and success, he came to the conclusion that there are unique stressors in the lifestyles that artists endure. And it's relatively unexplored from a clinical standpoint. And while he works on completing his graduate degree, Nick continues to perform on stage across the United States and leads conversations about mental wellness in the entertainment industry, which are so important. Listen, if you want to find out more about Nick, go to nick-moulton.com. I'll put it up on the screen so everyone can go there and see this young man. So join me in welcoming the one and only Nick Moulton.
Hey, hi, everybody. Hi.
Thanks for joining us today. I was so happy that you agreed to do this podcast. We talk about a lot of issues in stress.
Yeah.
I don't think we've touched on this one before. And it's not just, you know, guys like you who are standing on a stage, but other people who have to perform.
Absolutely.
You know, giving speeches or whatever. So it's a very important topic. How did you get interested in the mental wellness part?
You know, this has always been something that has interested me as a topic is just understanding like how our brain works and how to, I guess, like optimize it. Right. When I was a kid, my parents were divorced pretty young. And so we had to have a lot of really honest conversations, right from the get-go. And my parents always encouraged, even though they weren't together in the same household, that they always encouraged conversation, honest conversation. And that really sparked this interest of pursuing conversations that like revolve around the honest truth from within rather than the honest truth that you want to be outside of your body, you know? Because those can be really secular things sometimes. And right. I think a lot of the work that I've been trying to do lately is trying to merge those two things, is trying to have an honest conversation from the inside that ultimately creates an honest conversation from the outside, which, if you really boil it down, is also kind of the truth of acting as well. You want to make those circumstances real within you. to a certain extent, right, within the realm of safety, you know, you don't want to send yourself off the rails with like method acting or anything like that, but yeah. You want to have a truth within you that ultimately people can see, and that's what's going to bring in the best product.
And it's led you to pursue a degree in mental wellness.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm sure definitely not an original idea, but during the pandemic when things really hunkered down, obviously the entertainment industry shut down as well as many other industries, but it forced some self-reflection about what to do, where to go, and how to move forward with this. During my time as a professional, I've always struggled with various stressors. Of course, money is one. Having money fluctuate in and out, performance stress and anxiety, the irregularity of what we do, being able to, the stress of trying to balance work and home life. I mean, there's just a multitude of stressors that really affected me throughout this time. And I managed them well enough to continue to do it. When things stopped, then I really needed to focus on what am I doing and where am I trying to go? And is this really still tangible? Which is a question I ask myself all the time is this stress still worth it?
Right. I think we all ask that.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. and everything from our jobs to our relationships. I'm just saying, not my relationship. My relationship is perfect.
Well, yeah, and you get into this thing where you say, oh, this industry is so toxic, it's so challenging. Yeah. And you could say that about any industry, you just need to be in it in order to say it. So this is kind of helping me double down back into the industry. That's helped me a lot and really helped me grow and learn about my life, but also to learn that it's really essential that we tell stories, we tell human stories. That was a way that we logged history from the very beginning of time was through art. And now obviously that's not so much, we have a better record keeping, but it's really essential still that we tell stories to document our culture, document where we were in the world and how we felt about it rather than just writing it down in a textbook.
Right. So I wanted to ask you, cause you just mentioned a whole bunch of stuff that you deal with. Mm. And we say here at AIS that, you know, stress is different for everyone. Everyone reacts to it different and reacts to the challenges different. But do you think there are some commonalities amongst artists that they face being just in creative endeavors in general?
Yeah, unquestionably. I think it's fair to say that, like I mentioned, finances is unquestionably one that is, you know, across the board. It happens with, you know, not only artists, but gig workers as well. That's unquestionably dealing with that inconsistent income is really challenging. And with that comes working sort of the opposite hours someone who works a 9-to-5 or a salaried position might work. That becomes extremely difficult too. Part of the work that we do is, you know, it's hard to do our work if we're uninspired. And so dealing with how do you cultivate inspiration to do this work, because it comes from a personal place, but it can't be mechanical, then it's losing what makes it great. So finding that inspiration is super important. And then, of course, hitting deadlines, too. You know, you have to have inspiration for a show or our film, and you know, when the camera rolls or you know the curtain comes up, that inspiration has to be there or else, you know, and that's your reputation on the line every time you go out there. And the next part is you are your business,
right?
There's no one, you are the CEO, you're the CFO, you're the media manager, you know, you are everything to that company, and that is a daunting task, and sometimes that can feel, you know,
overwhelming.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And dealing with those stresses of understanding, how do you do your finances in a way that is going to make it better? How do you run your media pages and websites and, you know, advertising, all of this stuff without having a degree in it, you know? Right. So you have to be this really like multi-hyphenate no matter what, if you're going to be successful.
And it's changed so much. You know, I mentioned to you earlier when we were that I did some acting as a kid, but there was no, you know, social media. Right. There was, I had a headshot, you know, it was, and that was it. Yeah. You have to manage a lot of different things these days. The world is much much smaller than it was when I was your age.
Yeah.
So like you said, you have to have multi-hyphenated positions. And because you have to do all those things, even if you think, hey, I am really good at being an actor and I love what I'm doing, I'm not that great at self-promotion, or I'm not that great at this, or I'm not that. So you have self-doubt in multiple areas.
Mm-hmm.
That self-doubt has to increase your stress levels.
Exponentially.
Yeah.
To say the least. Yeah, absolutely. It's something that, you know, self-doubt is, if self-doubt is on one side of a spectrum, right, and confidence is on the other, I think we like to believe that confidence, which is the positive trait, is something that we somehow gain and then we never leave. Like, we obtain it and then it's ours, you know? I found so often that this is the mindset that we pursue. Once I have confidence, everything will be better. And I think that's across the board, not just in arts, but I'll root this in the arts. If I have the confidence, then I'll be successful. Then I'll get a Broadway show. Then I'll be number one on the call list for a TV or film spot. Then I'll get the voiceover gig that I've always dreamed of. And that might be true. You might have that for a little bit, but it's going to go away. It comes in seasons and in waves, and it's unquestionable that it will.
Right.
So I think when trying to interact with self-doubt, that's something that I've tried to remind myself, is that this is not it. This is not complete, that this is still a journey. And that reminds me to continue to cultivate those scenarios, those things, those tools, those relationships that help me stay on top of self-doubt. And so one of those things that I do is try to keep a positive group of people around me. And whether that's the people that I go home to and that I cultivate those, you know, those personal relationships with that help me when I'm trying to mull through an idea, or it's those professional relationships that I go and say, I want to work with this director again, because that was a positive set. Right. That was a positive rehearsal room. And that left me inspired to go do more. They're hard to find, but when you find those, you just don't want those to leave. So really cultivating that group of people who's going to help you, lift you up and really augment you, is the kind of things that you really need. And outside of that, trusting the work that you've done is super important. And having that positive self-talk. And then on the other side of it, it's just submitting to sometimes that it's okay to like have some self-doubt, and it allows you to be human. And that also can be motivating.
You know, I'm listening to you and I agree with it. You were hitting the nail right on the head. And I'm thinking, wow, what a parallel this is to an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, because when I was an athlete and competing, you're feeling really good. You're very, very confident. You're winning and you're winning and you're winning. And along comes some guy that kicks your butt and he wins and you lose. And if you let that self-doubt, oh my God, am I losing myself? Have I lost a step? Have I lost... It can really throw you off your game.
Absolutely. So I actually grew up playing sports, and that's where I actually thought my life was going to go. I was in high school. I was attending private schools to, you know, play sports, get scouted, and then go to school for free. I had no idea that I was even interested in the arts. I was a musician too, so I had an interest in that, but I didn't know that I was going to go into theater. So I thought I was just going to go play, you know, go to a prep school, New England prep school, play, you know, play D, hopefully D1, but like probably D2 or D3 sports, and then have my life set up for me where I didn't have to pay for school.
Right.
And that was kind of where the idea started to root itself from in pursuing this work, was looking at what does an athlete go through. They go through this performance of, you got to hit it. You have to hit the route. You have to make the pass. You have to make the save. And then what do you do to center yourself to actually make that happen? Because you go to practice 5-6 times a week. You're in the gym every day. What does it take to get there? And it's always that mental part that's getting that last hurdle. And it's the hardest part.
At the end of the day, we all end up in our own head anyway. You
Absolutely.
Know, because you made a really good point about having positive people around you. And AIS, you know, we've looked in, obviously, we've look once or twice into the realm of stress. And one of the things that I have seen is that negative talk is very contagious. Yes. The statistics are that we have, and I hear different ones, between 70,000 and 90,000 thoughts a day, most humans. And 80% of them are negative.
No way.
So imagine if you can change just that percentage, just to 50-50, how much better you would feel, how much, you know, more confident and less self-doubt you would have. So I think you make a really good point of the people that you associate with can help you manage your stress too, because we're our own worst enemies, God knows. You know, and like I said, you end up in your own head. Absolutely. You know, you talked about something I wanted to ask you about, because I think it's a common people who know the performing arts kind of realize that financial stability sometimes is a dream more than a reality. And it's a big concern. And finances for everyone, especially the last few years, have been a very big stressor on people. People have lost their jobs, have closed their businesses, have lost their homes, you know. But when you're in a business that, even in its best times, has a 90-something percent unemployment rate, mm-hmm. how do you deal with the financial, you know, instability of it all, and balance that with pursuing artistic passion?
Yeah, that is really tough. I would say to be the most reductive answer that I could put out is just to kill your darlings. And also a, you know, an entertainment term. What I mean by that is to say you really have to pick and choose the things that are vitally important to you, and you need to, when money comes in, you have to take it and unquestionably put some away for that, like, rainy day fund, or, you know, when the business takes a turn and they're no longer looking at you this, you know, for this 6 month period or whatever that might be. So it, you know, if entertainment or is your primary income, it's killing those darlings and saying, this is what I need to focus on most. This is where that money needs to allocate to, whether that's rent, whether that's utilities, or that's also saying what is the next thing in my career that I need to reinvest in? Do I need to be back in improv classes? Do I need to really be working out for a role that I have coming up? I just don't have the, you know, I have nothing right now, and I need to reinvest in my body or myself in order to prepare for that role, that opportunity. That you really have to focus on those vitally important things. And it's probably only going to be one thing. Outside of paying your, you know, monthly expenses, what's that one thing that you need to focus on? And that can change, and that should change based on where you are at in your life, where you're at in your career, and where you're trying to go too. That's, I would say, probably the primary thing. The other aspect is to not be so beholden to just being an artist to bring in your income. I think that there's a lot of pride in the line in saying that this is what we want to do. Now, as you started the podcast to say that everyone has their own opinion and perspective on stress, their own experience with it. And it's the same thing with entertainment as well. Of course, that your journey is not going to be like anyone else's. Someone can come straight out of school, or not even go to school, go straight to Broadway, go straight to number 3, 2, 1 on the call sheet, and you're, you know, you're set free. You're good. And other people have worked like dogs to get to where they're at. You can't look at other people and say that that's not fair. That's, you know, they did this or that. Your journey is your journey. Stay your lane and start to realize that there's other ways to make money. There's other ways to generate income. As artists, we are extremely adaptive. Right. We are extremely resourceful, and we're used to putting on multiple hats or jumping into somebody else's shoes. The skills that we have and that we are taught are extremely transferable.
Does the stress from the finance, you think, affect your passion to continue in your art?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the main stressors that artists endure, and that causes that question of, should I still be doing this? Because it's difficult to plan for a life, you know, to plan for major assets in your life, having a house, raising a family. It's extremely difficult to wear these like multiple careers on, to say I'm an artist, but I'm also, you know, I'm also a social media manager. I'm also executive assistant. I also own my own business. Because all of these things have their own schedules and the flexibility or inflexibility of them. It's extremely difficult. So a lot of people eventually get to a place where they say, I need consistency. I need to step out of this business. And that's fair and fine too. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's another thing that's often like, I guess like shamed.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, I'll be shamed or cast out of the tribe. Yeah, exactly. If I gave up, you know, and that's not what it is. It's not how it should be perceived.
I agree. And you know, it's like you said, it's very hard to, you go, let's say pick a typical profession, like you're going into law or going into medicine or something like that, or psychology, you can basically make a kind of life plan. Yeah. A lot of people who I know who are in performing arts, you ask them, what do you want to do 10 years from now? You know, it's a difficult question. You know, how do you get there? And also a very good point you made is comparing yourself to another person is very dangerous.
Yeah.
And can cause you a lot of anxiety, which is caused by stress, obviously. But that anxiety, oh my God, I came out of acting class with that guy and I'm seeing him in the movies and here I am. And sounds like a dangerous road to go down, you know, mentally anyway.
Yeah, unquestionably.
So what do you do to help manage some of the stress, maybe before a big performance? You have to realize that people who, you know, I'm actually going to see two Broadway plays in a couple of weeks. And, you know, I look up there and I think, oh my God, you have to have a lot of guts to get up there. That's got to be so stressful. Mm. Not only if you blow your own performance, but you can blow somebody else's too. You know, how do you manage that stress? What are some of the things that you do? A lot of people who are listening to this podcast find themselves maybe not in that position, but in similar positions.
Yeah, sure.
They have to go up and do, I don't know, some stupid PowerPoint in front of a corporate board or something. God knows. I was a teacher and, you know, I've had to present at conventions to 10,000 people and things like that, you know?
Yep.
So it's in a way it's similar. What do you do to manage your stress before that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is probably the question that's really spurred me to get into this kind of work, because this is something that I've always struggled with. It's extremely difficult because just to talk kind of a little bit about it, you know, the prep of it, I guess, which is going to kind of heighten the answer, so to speak. Obviously, our brains have a different trajectory than our bodies, and so you have this autonomic stress response when you go into a situation where you have the fight or flight mentality coming into this that you don't want. You know it's going to happen and you do your best not to engage it, but it's going to engage naturally. So you have this, you know, you start sweating, your heart starts pounding. And then obviously when you're trying to do such a highly technical thing like dance or sing or drop yourself into an extremely vulnerable state, it's kind of the opposite of what your body is trying to allow you to do. So some of those things that I'll do are to just reconnect my body. I'll do some breathing, some meditation, just to center myself and remind myself of where I am and to remind myself that I have spent thousands and thousands and thousands of hours training to be in this moment.
Right.
That eventually your body is going to deceive you and that you need to trust the work that you've done. And so I actually ask this to a lot of people, a lot of my friends who are in the industry on both sides of the stage, in front of the stage and behind the stage. My partner is actually a wig supervisor for a Broadway show, and she still deals with the same kind of stressors. Is how do you hit when you need to hit? And it's trusting the work, period.
Okay.
It's That's trusting that you have prepared as best as you possibly can, and to give up any of those notions that you might fail. In the same way that you were talking about positive self-talk, you have to quiet those and say that I trust the work. What's mm-hmm. the best possible outcome? Let's ride with that. And know that failure is an option, but hopefully it's not, you know?
But you know what? Hey, all of you out there who are watching and who've been listening to this podcast, how many times has a guest like Nick said to you, I do some breathing, I do some meditation? Guys, how many times do we have to say it? Breathing is like one of the top things you can do to help calm that fight or flight feeling that you have. And doing meditation, here's a young man who does meditation. It's got to tell you something. It's been going on for 5,000 years. So I've become an advocate of breathing techniques. Never did it before I got involved in this. You do it as an athlete for different reasons, to get that oxygen going and stuff like that. But to calm your stress down and to do meditation and things like that never occurred to me. Guys my age, what meditation? I'll fall asleep. You know you won't. If you do, so what? Right. you probably were tired and needed to sleep. It's okay. Right. But you hit – I love that you said what you do before performance is – adjust the physicality of your body. You know, you calm that breathing and your heart rate and things like that.
Yeah. I think also keeping your expectation low of what that's going to do, I think, is also really important. I think that we approach it with a mindset that there is a solution. If I have a headache, I'll take ibuprofen and it'll go away. In this scenario, if I'm stressed and my body's having that autonomic response, if I breathe, it'll go away. It's not the case.
Yeah.
We have to count the metrics of understanding that that's a spectrum of change, right? And so if I start to do that breathing, just how much more connected am I going to be? Shoot for 10%.
Right. Yes.
And now
good point.
You change that to saying it's success or fail. And you're probably going to fail because you're not going to return to a normal state, because you're not in a normal environment, and you're not under normal stressors. You can't have that expectation. You have to set a more realistic expectation of saying, I just want to shoot for 10% better.
Right.
That's it. And go from there. And that will put you in a more positive space.
And you know what? You bring up a very good point. Not all stress is bad. Nick That's needs true. That stress before he goes out on that stage, because it makes him perform better. It also makes you perform better when you're at work. There's stress and there's eustress, and we have to understand that there is good stress. It makes us more productive. It makes us perform better. In your case, really perform better. And so feeling a little stress is not necessarily a bad thing. It's when you're being overwhelmed by the challenges and your stress levels are so high that you're just swimming in a sea of cortisol and you're overwhelmed. That's when you got to stop and say, okay, let me fix this. All right, I wanted to ask you about something else that I guess everyone has to deal with, but I think artists have to deal with, in performing artists especially, and that is the feedback and the critique that you guys get. I'm not good at that. So you guys like put yourself out there and say, go ahead, I got a big target on me, let me have it. How do you deal with that? That's a very stressful thing too. We all get evaluated by our bosses and stuff like that, and our spouses and our friends. But I think what you do has a special sort of level of critique.
Masochism. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. So I think it's just staying grounded with the work that you've done. I mentioned this in a previous question, is just saying, trust the work that you've done and trust the training. And I think that's part of it, is just saying that this is a snapshot in time. I think it's really important to remember that this is just a moment that you contributed to, that it's not entirely you. So as actors, we're kind of the face of it. We're the front man, so to speak. That is also to say that we are just a component of this machine. We are just a component of this mechanism, of this tribe, and of this village. And we're just the ones on the outside to take that fall. So I think it's important to remember that it's not just you, that this is a communal thing. And also, and to find those sources that have a constructive opinion and then have ones that perhaps don't. I am someone who is of a mindset that I don't know as if having critiques in newspapers is actually a beneficial thing anymore, especially with the culture of how it's been. I don't know as if it's constructive anymore. And I think that that's sort of the point of where it started, is to say, it's good to have some challenge, right? It's good to have some opposition to help, you know, spur you. I don't think you don't have light without dark, and you certainly don't have positive without negative. So I think it's just taking those sources that actually have something constructive to say and evaluating it, and then saying, I will let that stuff in. So you're creating a filter of what you want to bring in and what you don't. It's always a risk when you start to read reviews. Some people don't. I know plenty of people that they don't touch a single review ever, because it's just not worth it. They don't need the praise. They don't need the reinforcement. They trust the work that they've done. They trust that their director has guided them in a space that they need to be in. And they trust themselves that I've brought everything that I could have to this part at this moment in time. If I were to do it 10 years from now, sure, it might be different. This is the best that I could do right now, and I'm at peace with that. What's next?
Okay, but that's from outsiders. Yeah, I agree. In my life, when I was probably younger than you, I was a police officer and NYPD. And I've been on scenes of events, let's call them events, and read about them the next day. And God hold me, the New York Post. And we go, wait a second, that's not what happened at all. Right. So I understand not reading any of that crap, because a lot of it is just crap. And it's just somebody's, you know, who thinks they're a writer. But what about the team you work with, the director, your fellow performers, understudies? You work with a lot of people. Like you said, it's a village.
Yeah.
What about their critiques? How stressful is that to hear, both negative and positive?
Right. I think it's really important to divorce yourself I think creating like a divorce of your business self and your personal self is vital. So there's a lot of people that in my circle and like my close circle who I work with in the business. One of my best friends, thankfully, is also my agent. And so what we do is create the separation and say, hey, I need to talk to business you right now.
Right.
And the conversation changes.
Yes.
And then when we're done, we say, okay, cool. I'm ready for, you know, you,
right,
the real you. Obviously, we can't fully divorce those. And again, it's not a binary split of saying like, okay, cool, I'm going to have an entirely different personality. But your vernacular changes, the way that you process information changes. And to say,
exactly,
when a director gives me critique, it's not about me as a person. It's not saying you're a bad person, Nick. It's about saying, this is not where we're trying to go. Can we spark up a new idea to take this in a different direction? You're not giving me what I need to get in this moment, and we need to get it. Same thing as an athlete. You're not a bad person. I just need you to make the save. I just need you to get the shot on net, whatever it is.
And you need to be coachable.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
so
it's their job.
Right. Exactly. And so it's just trying not to take it personally, even though it's extremely, I think this work is obviously much more personal than, you know, than a sport, because that's like, I think it's very pass fail kind of deal. And this is, and it isn't, but we bring so much of our own self, our own journey into the work that we do, that inherently when it gets shut down, it feels personal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
You know, I have this conversation a lot of times with people who just have so-called normal jobs, and if there is one, especially teachers, who you know, are getting critiqued or evaluated constantly, because it is constant for their educators. And I said to them, you do realize that's like their job. If you don't, it's what they're supposed to do. Is,
yeah,
they don't take it as a critique. Try is, you know, maybe it's a mindset. They're just trying to help you. And you're right. Yeah. You do, you know, what basically, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm hearing is you have to have a good balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's spot, you know, on.
And we've talked about that a lot. Does your perception of your personal value and self-worth evolve through your artistic career, you know, especially when you face both setbacks and successes? And so it's such a roller coaster for you. You know, a guy that goes, or a woman that goes into a job every day, and most of the time they know what to expect. You kind of know what to expect, but there are successes and failures, and it's ongoing. To me, that sounds stressful. Just say it.
Yeah, to say the least. It definitely
does
is.
Does it affect your self-image, your self-worth? And, you know, I know that's a problem for people.
Yeah, no, it unquestionably is. I think... I certainly know, let me correct myself. I know that it does have, there is investment in self-worth and personal value and the work that we did. Like I said, the work that we do has so much of us put into it, and that is you can't divorce that. Those two things, your journey is going to tell everything, is always going to be a part of the work that you do as an artist. It is unquestionable. So, yeah, how that perception, I think, has changed for me as I've grown older. And again, I've been in this industry for well over a decade now in multiple facets, that it's, I think the way I keep myself grounded is to go back and actually start at the beginning. I'll say this, begin at the beginning. And if I'm having a tough moment, I will go back to where I first started and where this, like, the inauguration of this journey, this career has started. And I look at where I was, what I was able to do, what I wasn't able to do, the kind of person that I was. And I will just kind of replay the whole journey from start to finish, like, quickly, you know, like we think about the end of our lives, you know, like we're like, do I see my whole life flash before my eyes? I try to do that with my career, just to really see how far that journey is, because from a day to day, you don't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll probably feel the lows more than you'll feel the highs, honestly. But
it's human.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But when you start from where you really started this, where have you come from? How far have you made it? Then it starts to put it into a more realistic perspective. To say, I've climbed a hell of a mountain,
and that's important.
This is where I'm at.
That's important, you know. And the reason I'm saying it's important, because there's a lot of people out there who have faced setbacks and whatever they do, and sometimes they feel they can never get out of it, and those stressors that they're feeling, we know, and certainly you know. Can lead to anxiety, can lead to depression, can lead to diagnosable problems. Mm. And that's why we talk about stress so often to be managed, because if it's not managed, it can lead to those things. And that's a thing where you know, we're trying to fight, just, if nothing else, just by education, and having guys like you come on and tell us, there's stuff you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always lived my life in a, like, trying to see the glass half full.
Hmm.
Well, my dad might say the glass is at 50%. It's neither half full nor half empty.
There you go.
I've tried to, and I think that's a beautiful thing to look at, is just perspective.
Right.
Is how are you going to look at a situation and make it what you want of it? Because sometimes it's not a good thing. You know, I think that sometimes you need to realize that, hey, that really sucked, and it's okay that sucked.
Has there been a time? in your career where you were really down and had to bounce back from it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Can you share that with us, or if it's not too personal?
Yeah, sure. I mean, well, I think part of the work that we're doing is being vulnerable and sharing that, especially as a man. It's something that I really like. I've been trying to encourage these kind of conversations. So I'm glad you're asking that question. There's been multiple times where that's happened. I've been really fortunate enough to set a goal that was obtainable and that allowed me to grow that goal. So I think the difficult times that I've experienced are more snapshots than really like major things. So I think to answer your question, I haven't had any really, really major like pitfalls because I've always done my best to take that moment and pivot it to something that's tangible and workable. Instead of sitting in that moment and allowing that endured stress to just pummel you, is to say, what can I be doing to continue to work through it? You know, there's unquestionably times where I've been in for 20, 30 auditions, and I have absolutely killed those auditions, and I'm just not the right fit.
That's gotta hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
you know, the rejection of the your chosen profession is monumental. It's insurmountable. Yeah, I mean,
it's crazy. The swings are very manic. So I guess like the one that comes to mind is I was on a national tour of a Broadway show for 2 years on either side of the pandemic. And that was so wonderful. It was an absolutely electric group of people. We got along well. And, you know, touring a show is you are no longer colleagues after that. You are somewhere between friends, family, and coworkers.
I understand.
You see them in every state. So I finished this tour and we were all thick as thieves, had immense respect and value for each other. And then that gets cut out. And of course that was a, you know, solid paycheck. It was a consistent paycheck, which is wonderful. And then that cuts out and I'm riding this high of confidence. And sure enough, I'm going in for audition. And it's just nothing's hitting. And it lasts for about 9 months. And of course, in our industry, that feels like sometimes feels like a lifetime. And about 6 months goes by and I'm not hitting anything. And I'm just ground zero, rock bottom. I go in for an audition and I think I did well. And I'm like, okay, I guess we'll find out. And so I at this point, I'm like, well, I might as well just really dig into, you know, to school again and just really crank this out and just get it done so that I can move on to this other thing. And fortunately it wasn't necessarily just the work that I did, but it was the energy that I brought into that room that I later found out that it was who I was. It was the positivity that I brought into that room as me, as Nick, and my personality that exceeded just the work itself.
And you're showing that even though there's a lull, a down period, you came back from it.
Absolutely.
And that's what people really need to understand.
Yeah.
You know, this doesn't define you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not absolute. And it can certainly feel like that sometimes too, where it just is one thing after the next. And I think it's just looking for those moments of joy, looking for those moments of positivity, those little wins, and just starting to recognize them around you to shift how you see the environment. If you're in a room and all the windows are closed and there's just one crack of light, you could see the entire room is dark, or you could see that one tiny beam of dappled light coming through. Choose your perspective.
Man, that's perfect. That is just perfect. Thanks. Because we try and preach that, you know, hey, I hate to say it's all in your head, but sometimes it's all in your head. Your perspective is everything. That's why stress is so different for each of us.
Yeah.
You and I going on a roller coaster ride. You're really excited. I'm scared shitless. We're both stressed out, but you're stressed, like you have good stress, and I'm not going. I'm scared.
Right.
And that's it. Like, right. Unless my daughter and my wife push me on and go home. But that's a whole nother story.
Right. Nick, I think that the difference is like looking at stress, good stress and bad stress, is looking at them as different things. Like stress that's like hurting you, I think is something that I'll consider as stress, and right. stress that's helping me, I'll consider as pressure. And I think that looking at those things, you need pressure to make a diamond. And I kind of try to rely on that, discerning those two things is like looking at those things as different things.
Differentiating those it's actually a very, very good thing. Yeah, I think that's very intelligent. We're running out of time, but I want to ask you the same question I ask all our guests at the very end. And you told us a little bit about it anyway, but pick something else. I want to know how you personally, not just before you get on stage or anything, just in life in general, and you're feeling that that stress come on, it's been one of those days. Mm. What do you do to help alleviate that stress? What does Nick do? Not Nick the performer, but what does Nick do?
Yeah. I changed my perspective. I think I try to look at it from another perspective, and just try to change my, like literally change my perspective on it and shift where I'm at in my mindset, and saying, if I'm looking at this from this part of my brain and saying, man, this is really tough today, I will try to just take a step beside it and go through it. I'll even sometimes change my physical paths or patterns in order to change it and to say, is this my mind telling me that it's one thing, or is this actually just a really hard day? Is this just a really stressful moment?
That's awesome. That's a great answer. I agree with that, because sometimes I'll say, okay, is this going to matter a year from now?
Yeah, right.
If it's not, the hell.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
yeah,
absolutely.
But I'm a lot older than you. And so, hey, I'm saving these years. I'm not going to mess up my day because... So that's a great answer, Nick. I want to thank you so much. What are you doing now? What are you performing now? I know you were doing Jersey Boys. Are you still doing that?
Yeah, no. So Jersey Boys was a flash in the pan.
I love that show too.
We actually connected in Fort Worth, Texas.
Right.
I was doing a show down there called Jersey Boys about the Four Seasons, and you'd
I grew
see
up
the
with
show.
Them.
They're amazing. Transcend.
Amazing.
Well, I'm working on another show that also is based in a musical artist that transcends our generation. I'm doing a beautiful, the Carole King musical right now in Raleigh, North Carolina. So we actually opened the show tonight. It is opening night. So this is
good
a really
luck
special...
or break a leg.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. This is a really special, like, kind of landmark to be able to like have this conversation, do two things that really matter a lot to me. So I'm doing that. I'm producing my own music. I'm creative directing an app with my voice teacher to help make voice lessons, premier voice lessons, accessible. And I'm still cranking along this this graduate degree and this graduate program.
Well, good luck with that. I'm very looking forward to someday to speaking to Dr. Nick Moulton.
Yeah.
And having him as not only as on our podcast, but as a writer on for the American Institute of Stress. Nick, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Such a pleasure and a privilege. Thank you so much.
It was great talking to you. We learned a lot. And I want to thank everybody else for joining us today. This has been Will Heckman. I was joined by Nick Moulton today. And I want to remind everybody to just, of course, go to stress.org. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. But I also want to remind you that just as stress is different for each of us, there's no one stress reduction or management strategy that is right for everyone. And I hope that what Nick and I had to say today will help you find contentment. Good day, everyone.